Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We will do...
Sean and I during the break were just discussing, like, okay, how can we dodge the Ravens both in the postseason, but also next year in the regular season? And it's hard.
Oh, that's what you were talking about with them not... Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that first part. Were you talking about, oh, yeah, if they win the division, that means we've got to see them next year?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I missed that part. Okay, that's a fair point, because the Texans would have to face all the division champs next year. The problem is,
right,
if they don't win the division, it probably means they're playing the Texans in the wild card round.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we'd hope is that somehow the Steelers win the division, but that the Ravens get beat by... Right?
No,
that's not what we want either.
We're going to have to play the Ravens at some point, whether it's in the wild card round this year or on the 2025 schedule.
What if I get them to realign the entire conferences
now, that's
by
something
next year?
I've not thought about, and that's a really good point.
Bill Polian could pull it off. He got the overtime rules changed to the dumbest thing ever.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Well, he'll probably be on Radio Row, and you can cozy up to him and say, hey, Bill, look.
I'll never talk to that man.
Okay. Well, you're not a big enough Texans fan.
He insulted Vic Fangio and Dom Capers while I was... Because, you know, he and Napoleon and Dom Capers were in Carolina together. And when we were here with the Texans and Dom Capers was the coach and Bill Polian was the Colts. GM.
Yeah.
He'd make these little snarky comments here and there.
You didn't like that.
I never appreciated. Yeah.
Yeah.
You insult Dom Capers, we're gonna have words.
Dom's a good man. He's a good man.
Mm-hmm. Unlike the man who screwed up the overtime rules.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for those 10-minute overtimes. All right. So Seth, the gods have been kind to us here early in 2025 in that. We've gotten to clown the Indianapolis Colts almost incessantly over the last few days because of all the little stories coming out, quotes, Shane Steichen sitting at a microphone saying, well, not everybody's going to be on time all the time. You know, Pat McAfee just laying into the... Pat McAfee, I think Pat McAfee is really like the one that, like, that's the one that, like, opened up the dam. You know, like, the McAfee, and for those who are unfamiliar with what we're talking about, Pat McAfee, I think most of you know who he is, former Colts punter, and he's got his big TV show. He's on everything these days. He's on College Game Day. He's been a big advocate for the Colts ever since he got into media. Like, he loved his time there. He still lives in Indianapolis. But then at times this year, he was critical of the Colts, appropriately so. They're not a very good football team, particularly critical of Anthony Richardson, the quarterback, when he tapped out of the Texans game.
Right.
And now there's
like just about every other single former NFL player.
Yeah.
We had to explain to people why that was such a weird thing to do.
Right.
It's like the first time in the history of the NFL, the quarterback is tapped out because he's tired.
That's right.
On a third and goal.
On a third and goal in a division game. Yeah. Like it was crazy. So McAfee was critical of that and other things. And now all of a sudden the Colts, people inside the building are coming after McAfee. So McAfee just took the gloves off this week after they lost to the Giants to get knocked out of the postseason and just cited all these examples of how unprofessional the team is inside the building. They skip treatments. They're late to meetings.
Yeah.
They're soft. Anthony Richardson is soft. All these things. He crushed them again yesterday. Like, he is not letting up. He crushed them again yesterday on the show. He listed the Colts that he would keep if he were to take over the team. This is not a long cut.
Pitch myself as president of the Indianapolis Colts. Not that I ever would, but I put a plan together and how to get rid of this entire fucking roster, except for Pittman. I want Pittman here. I want Pierce here.
D-Buck.
Let's keep Quentin Nelson. Let's keep DeForest Buckner. Let's keep Kenny Moore. I like Kenny Moore. Other than that, see ya. Every one of them. Goodbye. Take a hike. Thanks for coming. Jonathan Taylor, trade his ass out of town. How do we go about doing it? You got a second round pick? Sweet. Well, first would be better. We'll do this for the good of the program. Anthony Richardson was a good project. Get him out of town. Fourth round or whatever you got. See ya.
Okay. He's basically starting a garage sale in front of Lucas Oil Stadium.
And honestly, too, I don't think he mentioned either of the podcasting linebackers, right, as guys that he would keep.
There's another – we don't have that cut. There's another cut later where you have to know what they're referring to in the cut.
Zaire Franklin and EJ Speed, who earlier this season or at the beginning of the season, Zaire Franklin made some comment about how they were going to go in and destroy the Giants because they're so pathetic and everything.
Yeah,
the Colts got destroyed by the Giants.
Last week. He was going through that list with Chuck Pagano of all people, and I'm like, Pagano, are you sure you should be sitting on this set being critical of the Colts? Like, I view you more as like part of the problem, not part of the solution over the last 10 years. But anyways, but Pagano's like, what about the podcasters? That's what he calls them.
So Pagano doesn't like the podcast.
Pagano, he didn't like him either. He didn't like him either. So McAfee has been crushing the Colts, continues to. He'll probably do it again today. Now comes this article from Zach Kiefer in The Athletic, which is very similar to the pieces that we've seen on The Athletic from the Jets beat writers lately, about how dysfunctional it is behind the scenes, how ownership is a clown show, all these things. The biggest, most damning quote in here to me, Seth, is the one where, well, first of all, the fact that they have players on the roster, veteran players, speaking anonymously to Zach Kiefer.
Yeah.
That's a problem unto itself. Like, I see this stuff. I'm like, Shane Steichen's got to be gone. Chris Ballard's got to be gone. That we're at the stage now where there's players talking to reporters saying this. There's no vision from the top down, from the front office to the coaches to the players. This is a veteran Colts player saying this. No one is ever on the same page, and every year at the end, we're sitting here losing. If you look at the best teams in the league, they all have a vision, and they commit to it. The Chiefs keep winning because they have a vision. The Lions turn things around because they have a vision. There is no vision here, end quote.
I think the sum total of it, though, too, is that you have to wonder if maybe the problem at the very base of it all is just the Jim Irsay and is kind of the erratic way that he's operated in an increasingly erratic way, which is kind of what happens when some owners start to get old. They start to get desperate and they start making more frequent changes because they know their time is running out.
Yeah,
I mean, Irsay realistically probably looks at it and he's like, I know myself and I might not actually be like competent 3 years from now.
Correct.
Right, he might be alive but not able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it looks like a desperate organization.
Yeah.
And I'd say drafting Anthony Richardson, I said yesterday, I try not to criticize teams for just taking a swing at a quarterback, but Richardson was very much an extreme project. And which led to Ballard in this article now saying, I wish we hadn't played Richardson as a rookie, which, that's pretty much what everybody else kind of thought. Like, okay, Richardson's a second-round pick because you don't want to you take a guy like that in the second round because you're thinking, all right, it might be a couple or 3 years before he's actually ready to play in the NFL. He's sitting on a 47% completion percentage. Everything that happened is kind of like an extreme version of what a lot of people from pre-draft were saying you maybe should have expected. I know people from the University of Florida were saying it, that the guy's just, he's really immature. And like not in an awful way, but just more in a like, yeah, he's like an overgrown adolescent. And he ended up operating that way.
Yeah.
You know, they had to teach him about, hey, the quarterback probably, you know, should take notes in meetings. Hey, the quarterback, you shouldn't tap out when it's third and goal and your team is trailing just because you're tired. After a play in which he didn't even actually run all that far.
Yeah.
All those things are, you spent a high draft pick on this guy, and now you're saying, maybe we shouldn't have played him.
Yeah, and a lot of it in this article, Seth, the sense I get is just the mere handling of him, not just playing him last year, but how Shane Steichen has handled the PR aspect of it, that like he's been horrible at conveying to the media what's going on with the quarterback position. Like that Anthony Richardson gets benched after that Texans game to where he's got to become more professional and learn how to take notes. And then Joe Flacco comes in, and Steichen's like, well, we feel like Flacco gives us the better chance to win. And then Flacco sucks for a couple of weeks, so they yo-yo this thing and bring Richardson back in. And that's not because he gives them a better chance to win. It's because he's become a professional all of a sudden over the last 2 weeks.
Right.
Like, it's just like Shane Steichen doesn't know how to conduct a press conference. He doesn't know how to lie, you know?
Well, like, no, and I think it...
Really bad at lying, you know?
Like, right. Well, and that's one part of, you know, sometimes that's rookie head coaches. It takes them a while to kind of learn all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is that, wow, it sounds like there's zero discipline. It sounds like you got multiple guys showing up late to meetings, and it's one of these kinds of operations where Shane Steichen, much like you might guess, because this is what his personality seems like, he's probably a really good offensive coordinator who's just not cut out to be a head coach,
yeah.
Which is why I hope they stick with him for at least 4 more years.
Do
you got to give him time. You got to give him time to grow into the role, Sean.
Well, and I just see stuff like this, like what you just described, and reading this article, and just Shane Steichen's inability. The job seems too big for him. He's not going to done a good job of getting Anthony Richardson going here, which is what his calling card was going to be. You know,
yeah.
He was going to Jalen Hurts Anthony Richardson into being a good quarterback. And I see all these things, and I'm going, man, if I had to fire somebody, I'd fire Steichen. Like, if you had to fire one or the other, Steichen or Ballard, like, I'm as a Texan fan, I'm much more hopeful that they fire Ballard, because I know the team hasn't been winning divisions and all these things. I think Ballard is a better GM than Steichen is a head coach.
He's put together, look, I mean, this was a competitive Colts team despite all the other issues.
Yeah.
Can't find a quarterback. Right. I mean, Ballard, I don't know. It's his one big fatal flaw, which is kind of a big fatal flaw in the NFL these days, is he just seems incapable of finding a quarterback that can put them over. He has put together some Super Bowl caliber rosters over the course of the last few years, or at least, you know, teams that could reasonably be considered Super Bowl contenders,
except they
didn't have the right quarterback there.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, there's a little bit of luck involved with all of that, but now it's been guy after guy, and he's passed up various quarterbacks in the draft. He's passed up various opportunities for guys like a Tom Brady or whomever else. So it's just, it's kind of a big deal. It's one item on the list that he hasn't checked off, but it's a really big item.
Well, this article, too, points out a really good point.
It's like he's a surgeon who doesn't like the sight of blood. Awesome at everything.
Right.
Everything except the sight of blood.
Doesn't like lasers or scalpels. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And we're going through this Colts stuff because this is the team, like, in the AFC South, this is the closest thing the Texans have to them. If you're looking to feel good about something, just know that the rest of the division is there's a substantial gap between them and the Texans right now. This is the second place team. And we're going to do the Circle of Swarm here, somewhat begrudgingly, in about 8 minutes or so, for this week. The other thing I was going to say about Ballard, and again, I would say, like, I'm not saying Ballard's done a tremendous job, but if I'm a Texan fan, I'm much more hoping they fire Ballard and keep Steichen than vice versa.
Yeah.
But the other thing they do point out about Ballard in here is while he's done a good job of accumulating talent, it's been at positions that aren't the impact positions. You know, he hasn't found that big-time receiver. Pittman's good, but he hasn't found that big-time receiver. His best pick was Quentin Nelson, who's a guard. He made a trade for DeForest Buckner, who's a defensive tackle. You know, he's found Jonathan Taylor, running back, which is that's the
part. Sounds pretty good to me as a Texans fan, but yeah.
You know, again, the Texans have found Will Anderson on the edge and signed Danielle Hunter. You know, they found Nico Collins, who's a Pro Bowl wide receiver. You know, they found C.J. Stroud, who's a better quarterback than anything that's come through the door in Indianapolis over the last 7 years since Andrew Luck. So that's the other thing they point out, too. That's why I hate drafting guards. Like, that's why I hated the pick. I didn't hate the pick of Kenyon Green because I didn't think he'd be good. I didn't like the pick of Kenyon Green because I feel like you can find suitable guards in the second and third round. You know, use those first-round picks on corners like Derek Stingley Jr., you know, edge rushers like Will Anderson.
Yeah.
Safety's become a more impactful position in the NFL just with the way the game has evolved and stuff like that. So they point that out too. Like, yeah, Ballard's done a good job, but it's almost like he got all the nice appliances for the kitchen, but man, the man cave sucks. He's got like a 32-inch TV in the man cave. What's going on?
If you go to Anthony Richardson, aside from his immaturity, there's just the fact that he very much seems like, again, what his scouting report was, One of these guys who's so freakishly big and talented physically that it makes him injury prone.
Yes.
Because one of the complaints people had before Anthony Richardson was benched was, hey, how come they're not using him more with designed quarterback runs? So he ended up, when they brought him back, he had twice as many designed QB runs per game as he had before he was benched. And what happened? Oh, back spasms to the point where he couldn't walk.
Yeah.
But he just, because that's what, so you've got this guy who's got this incredible athletic ability, but you know what? You can't really use it.
Right.
Yeah. It's almost like you got to treat it like it's a cartridge of nitro or something. And that's it. You can do it once or twice per video game, but
I got to power him back up. How do I power him back up? Did you see the cut from Anthony Richardson where he's like, oh, yeah, I've had these back issues since I was like 7 years old? Like, it's.
Yeah. But now he knows that it's. He feels optimistic about it because now they've identified the issue, which is a disc issue.
Yeah.
Which
okay,
is
which
like, yeah.
Nothing bad.
That
there.
Never ends up being an issue with athletes.
Fine.
We here in Houston can speak about back issues and guys like basketball players. So, well, you know, though, Sam Ellinger, credit to him, gave him a copy of the book Atomic Habits.
Have you read that? Have you read Atomic Habits?
Yes, I have. That's one of the books I've read like 10 times. I really like... Yeah. Okay. I've... the three habit books that I would recommend are The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
It's Covey. Stephen Covey, right?
Atomic Habits.
Yep.
And I'm blanking on one because I read it like a couple years ago.
Obviously,
and I liked it,
one of the habits is not memorizing which books
I'll bring
read.
It up later. Yes, the two that I lean on, the two that I would recommend, I would say those two.
Yeah.
Atomic Habits and The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah, that Stephen Covey one's been around for a long time.
I'm not going to scroll through my Kindle app right now. There was one I read a couple years ago that I liked, but I'm blanking on it.
Yeah, so Ellinger gave Richardson that book. He's like the Case Keenum to C.J. Stroud for Anthony Richardson, you know, like the...
Except that he's the exact same experience level in the NFL.
I'm just saying, like, as someone who's, like, you know, trying to kind of, like, guide the young kid along, you know?
Right, but I'm like, but it's Sam Ellinger who's you know,
been there 2 years longer.
2021 draft pick, yeah.
Yeah, it does strike me.
He's not a crusty old veteran.
No,
got your very young third string quarterback giving life advice.
Fair, but counterpoint. I would say that the actual emotional gap between Ellinger and Richardson is a canyon compared to between Keenum and Stroud. I would say Richardson needs Ellinger's guidance more than CJ needs Case Keenum's guidance at this point, based on everything we're hearing about Anthony Richardson out of that building. What's the closest thing that the Texans have had to the McAfee situation? Is it Andre Johnson tweeting when Deshaun Watson requested a trade? Like where you've got some... I think McAfee is considered
like
a Colts legend.
Well, but also McAfee is, he was a really great, he was a great specialist, but also he's very, very notable in the public eye now.
Yes.
Like he's more of a big name and more of a voice now than he was as a player because he's on ESPN.
Right.
I think that's probably when Andre Johnson criticized Jack Easterby.
That's where like everybody sits up and goes, oh, it's that guy talking.
Yeah.
This isn't just some rando on a podcast somewhere. This is Andre Johnson. I can't think of anything else. Like, that's the only... Texans...
Oh, Tiny Habits. That was the book that I had read.
Okay. Tiny Habits?
Tiny Habits.
Okay.
It's by Stanford. The one thing you realize after you start reading is a lot of these habits authors, they're kind of saying the same thing, just packaged.
Are they? Because one's Atomic Habits and one is Tiny Habits. I haven't read any of them, so that's my observation. You got to sell me on this one.
Atomic Habits.
It's a lot of habits.
Atomic Habits is better. You know what? You're right. Atomic Habits is a better name and a better title than Tiny Habits.
Yeah.
But both of them would tell you, any of these habits people would tell you, part of it is breaking things, you know, breaking things down into smaller tasks so it doesn't become so overwhelming.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, I think Atomic Habits, I think I read Tiny Habits because it's cited in Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
But it's, they're all basically telling. The thing that's good about 7 Habits for Highly Effective People is that it really leans into the kind of the family dynamics side of things.
Okay.
And I'd read it once when I was a young man, and I've talked to a couple other people who've had this similar experience. When you're young and you're just kind of, you know, self-obsessed and everything, and you don't have a family yet, I completely forgot that there was anything about family in there.
Yeah.
Then once you have children and everything, you read it like, oh, this is way better. I'm going to get way more juice out of this for like relating to my family better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, probably the last time I read the Covey book was when I was like first like getting into sales or getting into management. My kids are like 2, 2, and 1. And you know, like, so it's a, yeah. Okay.
You're all hyper fixated on, you know, meeting your quota, destroying your quota.
Yeah, crushing my quota. Yeah.
Then it's good to reread by the time your kids are teenagers and you realize like, oh, me being so fixated on my career has turned my family life into a shambles. I gotta fix this before they get out of the house.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll go back and read Covey, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you walk up to me, my birthday's in a few weeks, if you walk up to me and as a birthday gift, you're like, here are two books, Atomic Habits and Tiny Habits. I'm just going to throw them both back at you. Pick one. Pick a lane. Either give me the Atomic Habits or give me the Tiny Habits.
Hey, Sean, how big is an atom?
That's fair. Okay. All right. Okay. Fair counterpoint. Right. Okay. Now I need to read these books. Just to debate Seth better, if nothing else.
So we have an argument about physics.
About atoms. Worst argument ever. Seth, my man, this is a text. Please tell me you aren't wearing Hanes in this climate. That's like it's like wrapping your junk in a garbage bag. filled with manwich.
I have all. Well, no, as you guys know, I carry around spare underwear. Yeah. I've got, as you guys know, I mentioned it once like 3 years ago on the show, but I do. If I'm going to be out for an extended period of time and it's going to involve any outdoor time, I need natural fibers against my junk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like having, unless I'm working out in that moment, I don't really like to have any kind of polyester in my nether regions. It just doesn't feel good.
The texter says switch to MeUndies. It's life changing.
MeUndies.
MeUndies.
What am I, British?
It's the name of
the
company.
I'm not gonna put on MeUndies.
Okay. Well, if someone walks up to you with an endorsement,
what do I got a 4-inch unit? No.
I want this to happen so badly now. Like where next week, Seth's like, a minute for my friends at MeUndies. I hope a salesperson comes to you next week. But like Seth, we got this great endorsement. Yeah.
Look, they've got a couple of those brands that show they've kind of got a pouch for your sausage and eggs there. I'm gonna try one of those maybe. But I gotta have cotton. I know. It sounds dumb, but that's why I carry spares.
Yeah,
you know what I do during the pregame show? I do wear, because I feel like it's an athletic event, when we're doing the pregame show outside, I do wear my like athletic undershorts. I wear my Under Armour like spandex.
Seth brings a suitcase to training camp. That's a three outfit day right there for you out of training camp.
Yeah, because I'm gonna sweat through the first shirt, then I gotta go inside into air conditioning and everything.
Man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, we gotta get to a circle of swarm here in
Do we?
Well, we're having trouble finding the intro to it in there, which is probably... We got it? Okay, cool. Let's do the Circle of Swarm.
You know, D'Amico always says, swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men. Believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
Dude, I have no idea who we're putting in this thing this week. Zero clue who we're putting in. For those who don't know, maybe your New Year's resolution was to start listening to Payne and Pendergast more. If so, good job by you. That's an atomic habit I can get behind. That's not a tiny habit. That's a big one. Seth and I each week on Friday, or, you know, in the case of a Wednesday game on a Tuesday, but usually on a Friday, we pick the Texan Circle of Swarm. It's an offshoot of the Circle of Trust that we used to do or still do with the Astros, with some key differences here. One, there can only be six in the Circle of Swarm. Seth and I each pick three. The Astros Circle of Trust can have as many guys as we trust. Two, the criteria is very subjective. It's guys we felt have recently swarmed, guys that we are hoping swarm this weekend.
Guys who have recently swarmed.
Probably be a little more of the latter in this one. What a lot of swarming going on Christmas Day with the...
You know, Nico Ravens. Collins has been a mainstay of the Circle of Swarm. His high watermark in the last three games is 60 yards receiving against the Chiefs.
How much of that is on...
I mean, Nico? I don't put it on him, But it's also like we're looking for swarm-like performances.
Yeah.
And it's now the I guess the big difference is he's been some of the only excitement offensively. He had 30-yard receptions in the last two games against Baltimore and Kansas. So at least he provided some bit of electricity.
CJ sailed that one that he was wide open.
That's
for
true.
About
he was wide
yards.
Open on that
yeah,
one.
Yeah. He's getting open.
That's
man.
A tough one. This might be the first time we've had a hard time figuring out exactly when and if to put him in the circle of swarm.
Dude, if we're basing it, for what we've done most of the year, what we've done is based it largely on the last game before, if not the last couple games before.
Yeah.
Do we even find six that are worthy? If it was solely based on the Ravens game, are there even six guys worth putting in the circle of swarm in a game you lost 31-2? And honestly, if the Ravens wanted to stay dialed in, that thing could have been 45-2. But they let you off the hook in the fourth quarter and just brought in their backup and started running the clock out.
Yeah.
But we got to get six, Seth. This is the first time where we're like, usually we're like, there can only be six. Now we're like, okay, are there six? You know?
These teams getting hot at just the right moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
By that, I mean getting ready for their trip to Cabo if they don't get this stuff right.
Yeah. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first, and I will put in the guy who's been the swarmiest in the last 3 weeks, Aziz Alshire. Just by virtue of just creating, he's drawn more emotion out of me than anybody else on this football team in the last 3 weeks. I'm going to say Aziz Alshire.
He visited the commissioner to talk about his suspension. He went to Houston Stresson's watch party for which game was that? I think the Chiefs game. He went to the watch party for that. That's swarmier than anybody else on the defense was the last couple of games. I'll
say
that.
The man of the people right there.
Yeah.
So Aziz Alshire.
Aziz Alshire is yours. You know what? I'm going to put Nico in. I'm going to put him in. I know you were talking about it. I get the debate over it. His stats haven't been where they are. Nobody's stats have been where they're supposed to be with the Texans right now offensively. So I'm just going to – Nico, and part of it is hope that he continues to do this. Nico Collins, you are in the circle of swarm.
I think the next one I will put in is, and this will be just probably his most precious, it's almost a postseason honor, Derek Stingley.
Derek Stingley,
for a matter of consistency and also, like, very notably, staying healthy all season.
Yeah, that's a good one, Seth. You stayed healthy all year. Knock on wood.
Best ability? Availability.
Availability. Yeah. Availability and intercepting Tua twice in the last 8 minutes of a game. Those are the best abilities, I would say.
Yes. Yes.
Availability and picking people off. So Derek Stingley Jr., yeah, that's true. And he made the Pro Bowl. Like that, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Oh, boy. Do I have to go?
We'll have to do this, by the way, after the Texans are done and out of the playoffs. Maybe that includes a Super Bowl victory. Who knows?
Maybe.
But once the playoffs are over, we'll have to do a final season circle of swarm.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I've been keeping score as to who's made it the most. Okay.
Well, that'll make it easy.
I've been keeping track. Well, if that's all what right. we want the
I'll
criteria
be able to, I'll
to
be able to veto some of the ones that make me. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I get it. Okay. Circle of swarm, eh? You know what? I'm starting to think of guys that maybe should have been in more times than they've been in. I'm going to put Kalen Bullock in the circle of swarm. I feel like he should have been in more than he's been in. He has been swarmy as a safety goes. He swarms in a different way. He swarms all over receivers or all over center field there when the ball is there. So I'm going to go ahead and put Kalen Bullock in. What the hell? So you think you can find one more set to put in here in this week 18?
Oh, yeah. I would say, I mean, because now we have to go. I mean, the Ravens, based on the Ravens game, there's very few people you can put in the circle.
That's my glitch. The Ravens game is giving me swarm block.
I know. Right now. Well, this is really almost becoming more. This is almost becoming like the postseason circle of swarm.
Good call. Yeah.
Now, our final circle of swarm, unlike most of these other garbage awards out there, will be both regular season and postseason.
Yeah.
It'll combine everything.
Yep.
Danielle Hunter, who, like, I feel bad. Yesterday, we didn't really address as much because the Pro Bowl roster came out during the show.
Yeah.
And
major snub.
I didn't realize what an injustice it was that Max Crosby made it in over Danielle Hunter.
You saw some of those stat side-by-sides, didn't you?
Yeah, and it's like, okay, this feels very much like Max Crosby. big names, been around a while. Like, so has Daniil Hunter, but he just hasn't been in the AFC for a while. But he plays for the Raiders, and it feels like the fan vote probably had a lot to do with it.
He's all tatted up. He spells he spells Max with two X's like a villain in a movie.
Yeah.
No, that's a good
one. It's like when like that Max Powers guy from The Simpsons.
Sure. Yeah.
Remember that?
I don't.
Wasn't that the name, or did Homer change his name to Max Powers?
I don't know. I
can't remember
what it
was. I told
you, like, that's the hard thing about bringing up Simpsons references is the show's been around for 35 years. I watched The Simpsons for a long, long time. I don't think I don't watch it anymore. I don't think my era of watching The Simpsons even covers like a third of how long it's been around.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that's my side take on The Simpsons there. All right.
The Homer changes his name without consulting Marge to Max Power. And Max is much more assertive and freewheeling than Homer was. So while he's shopping at Costington's, Max meets a successful businessman named Trent Steele. Another great name.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it ends up being...
Okay, so I've never seen this episode. Costington's? Is that like their version of Costco?
Like Costco, yeah.
I love that. I might have to go binge watch The Simpsons. All right.
Let's do that in the off season. That's a pretty big dialogue. Pretty big catalog you're going to have to go through there.
I might have to go on sabbatical. Text in. If I wanted to just go watch 5 episodes of The Simpsons this weekend, 5 episodes from the last, say, since COVID, all right? Mm-hmm. Since 20, I'm guessing there's a COVID episode in there, or 5. Send in on the text page. I want to watch some Simpsons this weekend.
Spoiler alert, the end of that episode, Homer changes his name back to Homer Simpson from Max Power.
Why?
But he attempts to get Marge to agree to change her name to something like Chesty LaRue, Busty St. Clair, or Hootie McBoob.
Those feel like awesome, like random porn name generator names.
Yeah.
Those are great. All right, so I got one more spot here, Circle of Swarm, right? So far we got Aziz, Nico, Derek Stingley Jr., Kalen Bullock, and Daniil Hunter. And if you're listening and you're a regular listener to the Circle of Swarm, this is clearly a combination of honoring them for their accolades and wishful thinking for the remainder of the season, Circle of Swarm. I'm really down to 2 choices here. CJ Stroud or Amen Thompson. I almost want to put Amen Thompson in for throwing Tyler Herro to the ground, but I don't want to sully the sanctity of the Circle of Swarm.
We don't want to turn this into something other than the very, very serious thing that it is.
Yeah. I mean, you got to this thing we've been doing for less than a season has a hallowed tradition. And we don't want to sully the tradition of our forefathers who invented this, whose names are Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast. I'm going to put C.J. Stroud
in. Max Power and Sean Pendergast.
Max Power, yes. Pope Zaza and Deacon Doubletree. I'm going to put C.J. Stroud in the Circle of Swarm because he's proven recently he can take an ass kicking. And we do need him to swarm if anything's going to happen in the postseason.
Much like the Simpsons episode where Homer fights, does he fight Mike Tyson? Because it turns out he has an anomaly where he's got this tiny brain but a huge head. So all this extra amniotic fluid around the brain cushions it, so he can take a beating. He can take a licking and keep on ticking.
That's funny. Similar to that, C.J. Stroud is Homer Simpson with a gargantuan melon. That's what he is. All right, so the Circle of Swarm this week is Aziz Alshire, Nico Collins, Derek Stingley Jr., Kalen Bullock, Daniil Hunter, and C.J. Stroud. Man, that Hunter snub was a big snub, man, for the Pro Bowl.
It feels like, I'd have to go back and look at this. I wonder how often when guys switch conferences, if it hurts the voting, because there's, in Pro Bowl voting, and I like JJ came out yesterday and kind of threw some shade at the whole Pro Bowl voting process. He said, hey, the voting's over when there's still 2 regular season games left. And like, so JJ, you know, he made the Pro Bowl almost every single year he's in the NFL. So he can speak with some, I guess, objectivity. It doesn't feel like he's got sour grapes over it or anything. I feel like Daniil because he played in Minnesota, which kind of gets ignored a lot, and then comes the AFC, a lot of the voting patterns and everything, people are just like, oh, well, I was going to vote for Max anyway, so yeah, Max.
Maybe. I like that theory, and yet Jonathan Grenard made it over in the NFC, so I don't know what the hell to think.
He's been part of a really, really good defense. Team.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah,
that, and a good, yeah, better team.
Better team.
The Texans' defense, as we know, they've done some things really well, but they're not a genuinely elite defense this year because there's just a few things holding them back.
And the team's a disappointment compared to the people.
Right.
Compared to what the people voting thought they were going to be. You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying compared to what the Texans inside the building thought they would be.
There's a lot of, I think I can tell from the national media and whatnot, there's a lot of, I can tell the Texans this year were an easy team to kind of be like, well, this isn't what we expected, but I don't really care that much about the Texans, so I'm just not going to talk or think about it that much.
Yeah.
Because I told you, I kind of was sending out DMs to various, like some of the bloggers that do the hardcore film work and everything. I was like, could you please do like a deep dive into this? Because it's very, very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. I my theory on that is I think a lot of those people probably were big advocates of the Texans as a dark horse Super Bowl team before the season. Because the Texans were the easy team to climb on if you wanted to sound smart before the season. And then if they make it, you're like, yeah, I was on the Texans. And now, I mean, they're a playoff team, but they're clearly not among the favorites to get even beyond the second round, let alone the Super Bowl. And so I think a lot of the people that were backing the Texans before the season are just kind of doing that thing where they put, you know, they're not making eye contact with the Texans anymore.
Those articles they wrote about the upside of the Texans are like my emails telling friends to buy Webvan stock in the year 2000. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
I was hacked.
Right.
I was hacked.
Right.
You idiot.
Yes. Now, excuse me while I go read Tiny Habits, okay? So I can stop
Minuscule
investing.
Minuscule Habits. No. Tiny Habits isn't even good. Microscopic Habits.
Microscopic Habits. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That's our circle of swarm for week 18. Hopefully there's some guys on Sunday that give us a reason to get amped up about actual performance on the field the week before. So we'll see what happens. Is Saquon Barkley trolling poor John Mara?
Oh,
yeah.
I hope not.
Via commercial, of all things. Yeah. We've got the audio. We'll let you be the judge. That's coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag. It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so let's refresh. It's always fun. I know we do a petty cast on Tuesday, but the truth is we get fairly petty on this show a decent amount. In a good way. And
doesn't sound like a character flaw at all to me.
No. It's good for radio. I will never not laugh at John Mara, the owner of the New York Giants. Just that Hard Knocks. I didn't realize he was just such a hump. You know?
What are we going to do about Saquon?
He's the generation that you worry about, because I believe he's the third generation, right, of the Mara family.
I think so, yeah.
It was Wellington Mara, and then whoever the next one was, and now John Mara.
I don't know. Yeah. He looks a little old to be the third generation. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but Wellington Mara founded the Giants in like the 1920s,
okay.
So it makes sense that, yeah.
Okay.
So the third generation is the one you worry about in family wealth.
Detached.
Because that's where they're so far away from, you know. Now sometimes it works out. The Rooneys have done very fine, of that. But it seems like the third generation is where, like, okay, these kids, unless their parents really worked with them, didn't have to really struggle for anything in life.
Well, no.
And it's just, you wonder. And, but, you know, the genes have been diluted a little bit by various whores that the guys have married. And, yeah.
Right. Well, and now more.
Shout out to the Mara women.
Now more than ever. And the whores of New York. Now more than ever, at least as far as the most important part of any business, making money, NFL teams are on autopilot. Like, it's almost impossible for an owner to botch the making
it's
money
a trust
part.
Fund.
Yeah.
It's a trust fund.
It's impossible for an owner to drive the business into the ground. You're profitable the second they turn the lights on in March for the business year because of the TV contracts. So just to refresh, here was John Mara, owner of the Giants, on Hard Knocks, meeting with Joe Shane, the GM. This cut gets better and better every time we play it, where Mara is fretting, chewing his nails over the possibility of Saquon Barkley signing with Philadelphia.
And the running back, I think.
What's the latest?
Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Mm.
Which I don't know if I'll make a couple calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I'm gonna have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that, as I've told you, just being up. I've been around enough players, but he's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah,
by far. He gets really emphatic at the end. Okay, so before we go back and dig into Mara again, the part that I want people to focus on, I'm going to have a hard time sleeping.
Right.
If Saquon goes to Philly.
Which, to be fair to Mara, like, it sounds like he's got a better feel for everything than the actual GM.
Yeah.
But that goes back to, like, okay, then why does this GM, like, how is this GM so kind of cavalierly trying to lead you down the primrose path and acting during that entire season during that entire Hard Knocks, kind of like nobody's going to want him.
Yeah.
No, nobody's going to want Saquon Barkley, and certainly not the Eagles.
We'll circle back to that, because in the umpteenth time we've listened to this, I heard something else just now that I want to dial back with you. But focus in on the I'm going to have a hard time sleeping, because Saquon Barkley just signed an endorsement with Unisom.
I heard some of you were having trouble sleeping, so I wrote you a lullaby. Rock-a-bye, baby, awaken your bed. As the thought of 2000 swirls in your head, it sure is tough to lose sleep over football. Not for me, though. Good night to you all.
Sleep over 2,000 yards, obviously. He went over 2,000 yards in his last game. I mean, that is a... You know, it's a little uncalled for. Like, hey, man, that's a shot at the one guy who wanted to keep you in the building.
That's a good point, you know? Sean. Like, you know what? Yeah.
It's kind of mean, and he's old. You're picking on old people here, you know?
It was Tim Mara who founded it, and then Wellington and the other son co-owned it, and now John Mara.
Now John, so he's third generation.
He is third generation, okay. So, yeah, John Mara was fighting to keep you on that team, now he totally could have if he wanted to, pull the trump card. But he's trying to let his football people be football people.
He was your advocate, man. He was your advocate. What are you doing? I mean, it's really funny, and it is a good example of capitalizing on just like a quote out there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost like the Hawk Tua girl, man. Like, you had like one little quote out there from somebody else of all things, and you're able to cash in with a nice endorsement. Good for you.
I think the other thing about Saquon, too, I just never watched a lot of interviews with Saquon Barkley for whatever reason. But this year, I watched. But I'm like, oh, man, I didn't realize like that he's a he's not your average athlete. Like, he kind of. Yeah. Like, I enjoyed some of the interviews I watched him this year. One of the ones was they had asked him about going for 2,000 yards, and he said something along the lines of, like, well, it's not something I was, overtly going after. And he spoke about it with a certain level of nuance. It was like, oh, he seems like he's 48 years old.
Very mature.
Well, and then Derrick Henry, too, as I sit here jealously looking at other people's players. Derrick Henry yesterday, they showed the clip of him getting the news that he got that he was in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like, oh, cool. All right. It didn't look like one bit like he was basking in the personal achievement or anything like that.
At all. And what was striking about that, I saw the same video you did, and what was striking about that is that they had a video. The Ravens apparently did a video of each of their – they had 9 guys get named to the Pro Bowl. So they did videos of the guys each finding out from – it must have been the GM, was it? It definitely wasn't John Harbaugh telling them. It was some member of the staff with the Ravens calling them into his office to tell – it may have been the OC, something like that. And Derrick Henry, very nonchalant about it because he's been there before. He's looking to win a Super Bowl. Zay Flowers got called in and was in tears. Because it was the first time he'd been named to the Pro Bowl. And Zay was part of that class where he was part of those 4 receivers that all got picked in a row in that class that year where it was, I forget the order, but it was like Jackson Smith and Jigba, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, and Zay Flowers. And he's the first one out of those guys to make the Pro Bowl. He was super emotional. Derrick Henry's like, cool, man, who else made it? You know, like,
yeah,
he's just picking away at his at his poke bowl or whatever he's eating from the cafeteria.
And plus, he probably also, like he knew he was going to make the Pro Bowl. It's aside from him having been to multiple ones before.
Right.
There's no chance in hell he wasn't going to be in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, Zay was probably surprised, you know?
I'm pretty sure it was Eric DaCosta. The only thing that it was, because I wasn't really, I watched it real quickly, and I think... Because Eric DaCosta has been balding for a while, but I think the guy in the video was, like, completely shaved.
Yeah.
So, good job, Eric DaCosta.
Yeah, yeah.
You went all in.
I can
you went
speak
all
to
in
that.
On the baldness,
I can
yes.
speak to that. So, hey, just to circle back to the Mara audio, because you and I have listened to this thing so many times because it's so funny. How about Saquon? Just play it from the beginning one more time, Mitchell. I'll tell you when to down cue it. The Mara.
And the running back, I think.
What's the latest? Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Mm. Which I don't know if I'll make a couple of calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen.
Okay,
but.
So down right there, like okay, this is where each time we've listened to that, it sounds more and more like Joe Shane is just like playing the old "get out of my office, old man" thing. Like I'm just gonna tell him something so I can end this conversation. Joe Shane did not want Saquon Barkley on the Giants this year.
No, that's it was 100%, and it was, and it every time they showed it, it looked like Joe Shane. Just trying to tell everybody in the organization how unimportant Saquon Barkley was going to be. Other teams wouldn't think he was. Hey, it's really easy to go out and get a running back. Like all these things. And then immediately, before free agency even officially began, all the running backs were snapped up.
Yeah.
And they ended up with Devin Singletary for way more money than he promised they were going to be able to get Devin Singletary.
Who wasn't even their starter at the end of the year. Tyrone Tracy was their starter. The thing in there that to me was now in listening to it, 37 times is the biggest tell, like where he goes, I don't know, Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know. I'll make a couple phone calls. If you truly wanted to keep Saquon and there's a team that's driving the price up, the conversation isn't, I'll make a couple phone calls. The conversation is, okay, we got to figure some things out now. You know, like if you're truly looking to keep Saquon Barkley and you hear that a running back needy team, the Bears at the time, they end up signing DeAndre Swift, but that they're driving the price up, then you're at least going, okay, what if we need to go from 12 to 14 million to keep him? You know, where does that money come from? You know, or if I'm the owner, I'm like, okay, the price is going up, so what are we doing?
Like, the other part of that series though too, so it felt like he was trying to make the owner think that they were interested in keeping him. Well, meanwhile he's telling everybody else in the organization, hell no, we don't want him. But the other dynamic was, well, we could franchise tag him and we could trade him, and his argument to those people who suggested that was, well, who's going to trade him? And I went through that last year and it took years off my life. It was too hard. It was uncomfortable for you.
Yeah,
sorry. So you don't want to pass up the opportunity to get a draft pick back. And the way the running back, and now look, the running back market like came back with a vengeance this year all of a sudden in free agency. But so you know, maybe he shouldn't realistically been able to determine that, but like him just flat out saying like, oh, that was hard, I don't want to do that again.
That was off-putting, for sure. Speaking of free agency, Alex Bregman's market is stagnant, it would appear. It doesn't look like he's getting the $200 million, at least not anytime soon. What are the things that could be scaring teams off of paying Alex Bregman $200 million? I'll bounce my list off of Seth. We'll do that next.